You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla Darroche. On today's show, we'll listen to the question and answer portion of a presentation on the budding marijuana industry in Alaska. Last week, the director of the Alcoholic Beverage and Marijuana Control Boards, Cynthia Franklin, dropped by Kodiak to give the Kodiak City Council and Kodiak Island Borough Assembly an update on the Marijuana Control Board and its regulation-creating process. At the end of her presentation, council members and assemblymen had the chance to speak with Franklin. Assemblyman Mel Stevens led with the first question.
You said very little about the opt-out provisions. So my understanding is that the Kodiak Island Borough, if it so chose, could either pass an ordinance or put on the ballot an ordinance which would simply say we opt out of this. There shall be no retail stores, no grow operations, no manufacturing operations or testing facilities within Kodiak Island Borough. If Kodiak Island Borough does that automatically resolve the problem for the city of Kodiak? Let's suppose the city of Kodiak saw it very differently and perhaps put on the ballot an opt-out provision, which provision failed 90-10, so that everyone within the city, the clear majority, did not want to opt out, yet the Kodiak Island Borough, which encompasses the city, opted out. Does the borough opt out control the city?
This is my opinion, okay? I mean, everyone has to understand that you're writing regulations. People are going to fight about them, particularly cities and boroughs. I found they're quite feisty. And then, you know, ultimately you might end up in court on this decision. I'm not a judge. I'm not the board. Okay, but when you read the definition of local government, it seems to be that each local government, the borough and city, are discrete local governments. And so the privileges afforded to a local government in the opt-out provisions would not kind of have a big fish eating a littler fish. If you have a local government that's the city of Kodiak, it is a discrete local government from the borough, from the borough government. And so the borough can opt out for the borough limits, but the city has its own local government, which can make its decision for the city. And that's the way I interpret the rules and the ballot measure together. Your lawyers may interpret it differently. And we have had this question come up, and when we attempted to write some special rules in this section, Article 2, that were based on what happens on the liquor side, we got some pushback from the Department of Law that because the ballot measure wasn't super specific about the opt-out, but said, board, write the rules about the opt-out, that there's the statute that controls the relationship between the city and borough is, of course, Title 29. And so there's some deferment to Title 29 as a statute when it comes to some of these fights, and where that would come in and where it wouldn't remains to be seen. As a lawyer arguing in that scenario for the city, I would say, hey, it says we're a local government. It says you're a local government. You can do for your boundaries what you want, but we get to do for our boundaries what we want. And another word about the ordinance versus voting or petition election thing, in Title 4, you can only opt out by petition election. In AS 1738, it says ordinance or election. So we attempted to write in some rules around how long such a decision would last, so that you theoretically don't have a scenario where you have a city council that writes an ordinance that says, we don't want any marijuana establishments here, and the people rise up and say, we unelect all of you. You're all gone. We'll get a new city council that does want marijuana establishments here, and then they come in and make an ordinance, and then, you know, that thing happens over and over again. So we had attempted to put in some language that had some space between decisions, as in alcohol, which requires sort of a passage of time before you revisit the issue. And that was 24 months. And the Department of Law came in a very early draft and said, no. You can't say 24 months because the ballot measure doesn't have enough detail about opt-out. You have to go by Title 29 rules, which is 6 months. Okay, and we did include language, which the Department of Law supported, that if the City Council or Borough Assembly passes an ordinance that the people don't agree with, that they could immediately start a petition and get a petition election going and kind of overrule the council's ordinance by virtue of a petition ordinance election, a petition election, no matter the passage of time. Now, the time amount of time it takes to get a petition election together and get it going and get it on the ballot is typically at least 6 months. So, that kind of makes the point moot. But the ins and outs of local option here are trickier because of how little we have in statute. And the Department of Law has kind of tended to lean back and say when there's a statutory issue about the relationship between these local governments, Title 29 is really where we're going to have to turn. A vague answer, I think each jurisdiction could make its own decision. But I'm probably not the person to ask.
Okay. Larry?
I was just wondering how it affects military bases and military reservations, whether whatever the city does and whatever the borough does, what happens when you drive on federal property?
Well, all private places and entities like the feds have the ability in AS 1738 to ban marijuana on their property. So in spite of the personal possession rights, an apartment owner, a federal military base, obviously these places are going to have prohibitions. Okay, so just like the federal military base can say, this is Schedule I controlled substance, nobody's bringing marijuana on our base, nobody's possessing it here, nobody's using it here, we're going to drug test everybody. All of those rights remain through the statute. They're not in our regulations because they're contained in the statute. By the same token, a private property owner has the right to ban marijuana on their property, so you can move it into an apartment complex and they can say, hey, no, can't have it here. And, it appears that the statute would support the property owner in that ban, including up to and including that personal possession and personal grow. Is that going to be tested? I think it probably is. And we'll see, how that comes out when those two, when you've got 1738 that gives the personal property owner the right to ban it, then you've got 1738 that gives everybody the right to have it, and then you've got the complication of the Raven and Noy cases and all of those cases. And so I see an epic legal battle in our future.
Just to follow up, I know a lot of this is going to work itself out over time, but in Kodiak there's a military base, but there's a large military reservation, and you indicated that the federal government has given some guidelines. But do those guidelines, are they for federal property? So say you're driving down the road through the reservation and you're stopped by base security for speeding and they find marijuana in the car. Are you subject to federal laws on possession, or are you under the state?
Well, it's a super interesting concept. We all live in the United States of America, right? And so whether or not you're going to have a different and federal enforcement on a road that is cutting through federal property, whether it's military base or something else, is going to be a question for the federal enforcement authorities. But what you have to remember and what people have trouble wrapping their heads around is that theoretically, all of our licensees are going to be committing federal crimes by distributing marijuana and selling it and growing it. And so you have to wrap your head around the fact that the federal government has said you are entitled to engage in this experiment. And so a question like that of whether you would be charged with something is just something that we won't know. But what we do know is that the fact that someone's going to depend on how much you have, right? So if you have less than an ounce, if you have a small amount, and you say to the a person stopping you, is it a federal agent stopping you? I'm assuming you're asking. You say, this is legal. This is legal under state law. You know, part of it is going to depend on how that federal agent reacts to that. I suspect that were you to ask as a local government, hey, feds, will you give us a prospective opinion of what you would do? Can we tell our people whether they can or they can't drive through there with that? Generally speaking, when you ask a federal authority or even a state authority what you might be prosecuted for, you get an answer of do it, and then we'll tell you if we'll prosecute you or not. You'll find out once you do it.
Dan, and then Kyle.
Thank you. Just a couple questions. In regards to local option and local control, so reading Alaska Dispatch News the last couple of days, it seems like there's been a little bit of a rush for people to it seems like a fair amount of people voted lately to opt out through their local option. Do you know at this point how many municipalities in the state have chosen to opt out? And then the additional question is in regards to local control, how many municipalities have you seen start to create a set of rules that would limit either, you know, large-scale growing or, you know, whatever it may be that they've decided to narrow down what they're willing to allow in their municipality?
Right, pass ordinances related to marijuana. I don't know off the top of my head. It bothers me that I don't know. We had a regulation in the draft that said when you opt out, you need to report it to us just the way you're supposed to report a Title IV election to us. Department of Law stripped it out, said you, by regulation, cannot order local governments to do anything. Only the legislature can order them to do that by statute. We said, how the heck are we supposed to know when something's happened? And they sort of shrugged their shoulders and said, no. So we're looking for a solution, and we have turned to one of our commerce sister agencies, which is DCRA, the Division of Community and Regional Affairs, which has local government specialists who have their finger on the pulse of their communities and know more about what's going on there. And so we are pursuing a solution with DCRA where DCRA would maintain a spreadsheet with who's opted out and who has passed ordinances and who has established a local regulatory authority, which is something that 1738 says that you can do, and that they would attempt to keep that spreadsheet as updated as possible because they have people who are going to those communities, who know the city clerks, who know the government officials in those communities, and who are aware. I mean, typically speaking, marijuana action at the local government level tends to get a bit of attention. Right now, we only know who we've read in the paper, same as you. But we are looking for a solution to that, and we're looking for a solution that doesn't involve us. Did you see our staff? We've got 16 people plus me.
Yeah. So just real quick on a follow-up on that. So how long right now Kodiak has not opted out. So at this point, starting February 24th, then people could apply with the state of Alaska. And how long would the turnaround time be from the time of application, best case scenario, to actually being able to have a license to have a retail store or a commercial grow?
Super good question. So we're going to begin receiving applications on February 24th, and if you read the regulations Article 1, those are going to be in the initial applications, initiation of applications. An applicant immediately has to turn around and go advertise their intent, place a public notice, and notify their local government that they intend to apply. They haven't paid any money yet. Okay, then they're going to go see if they can write an operating plan and meet all of the other requirements and check all of our boxes. Once the advertising period has passed, which is 3 weeks, so add 3 weeks to February 24th, and assume that you have the most speedy, pulled together, ready, a business person available, right? And let's talk about a cultivator for a minute. So 3 weeks from February 24th, they come to us and say, boop, done. We're done. Declare our application complete. At that point in time, we are going to send the application to you. Okay. We're going to say we've received an application in your jurisdiction, and your 60-day clock to protest starts ticking. You can protest for any reason, so you don't have to have opted out to protest. You just have to articulate your reason for protesting, and that's all in there. And then the board considers the protest according to the standard in the regulation, which is that it upholds the protest unless it finds the protest to be arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable. And so at that point in time, everyone is instructed in the public notice if they have personal objections to the issuance of the license. The board can also receive objections from persons other than the local government. Yeah, well, yes, in that same 60 days. And so then it's going to go to the board. And so if we don't hear from you on the local government side, your protest period is waived, automatically waived after 60 days. And I remind you that in liquor licensing, many local governing bodies use the protest tool to slow things down. If they have things on that are happening on their side with like a conditional use permit or they want some requirements met on their side, they'll protest that those requirements haven't been met yet. And the tendency is the applicant wants his license, you know. So instead of coming in and griping that it's not happening fast enough, they're really trying to meet your requirements. And so then ultimately, if they do, you can lift the protest and the license will be issued at a later date. So those are all tools that are commonly used on the alcohol side that we see local governments potentially using on the marijuana side. If you do that math out and you take into account the fact that everyone who's issued a license is going to have to be using this software, the anticipated implementation date of the software is May 23rd. It's an IT project, and so we're a little bit worried, you know, that sometimes IT projects don't come in on time. It's probably shocking to all of you, but we believe we're going to have a board meeting the second week of June, somewhere in there, and that will be the meeting where the first licenses are issued. So you should be ready to be receiving completed applications as early as March 15th. March 20th-ish, and I think that completing the applications will be a challenge.
Kyle?
It's my understanding that a pretty good majority of the voters of Kodiak voted in favor of this law. So it's my understanding, looking at the regulations and listening to what you've said, that if we decided to opt out, then the citizens of Kodiak could go back with a petition and vote to opt back in, so we would buy ourselves some time, presumably, and it would cost the borough some money to go through that process for their petitions and vote and everything. Are you aware of any empirical evidence that the deregulation or these new laws that allow marijuana legally and out in the light is reducing any kind of crime or anything like that because of bringing it out of the light and therefore lessening the amount of black market activity that may be associated with other illegal activities, either in Alaska, or probably not in Alaska yet because this is fairly new, but in other communities that have done this?
There are some conflicting statistics out of Colorado. There definitely is the immediate effect of lessening crime in the sense of nobody's going to be charged with a Class B marijuana misdemeanor anymore. And there were people being charged with that, just not incarcerated for it. So it has that effect. There is some evidence on the public health side, mainly in Alaska, from the what's called the YRBS, the Youth Risk Behavioral Survey, that's done of our high school age kids, that the norming of marijuana is affecting our youth's perception that it is not a dangerous substance. But that has been occurring for years. That was nothing that anybody can show through the data was triggered by the election. But the more adults use marijuana in the light of day as a regulated substance versus a dangerous controlled substance, the more our youth see that we as adults don't think it's dangerous, so their perception of the danger of marijuana use goes down. So I would say that in terms of significant evidence-based, data-driven surveys, that has been an effect that has been noticeable in Alaska probably since about our 2010 election to legalize. If I recall the graphs correctly, it's been up and down over the years at what our youth think of the dangers of marijuana. But overall, the regulations are written to try to bring marijuana from the black market into the white market. The commercialization is intended to shut down black market dealers. It will take a while, and it will take longer in more rural communities where either it's opted out or there's just the perception that it's too expensive to enter the regulated market and that you can continue to do what you've always done, and that works for everyone. In terms of opting out as effectiveness, I think that you can look to some dry alcohol communities in Alaska and see that they're not really dry. There's a fairly robust bootlegging market for alcohol in dry villages and dry communities in Alaska. And so prohibition is something that's not particularly successful in terms of keeping marijuana out. And in terms of the opt-out for marijuana today, under these rules, you have the added complication that you're never going to truly opt out, right? You're always going to have that personal marijuana, those personal grows, and chances are that the people that are really good at growing it are going to be making a little on the side, you know, selling it, and you're going to have some black market operations, whether you ban the commercial establishments or not. I'll say one more thing. It's our hope. I mean, if you could go in a store, you know, that looked like this and buy marijuana, that's an exciting experience for a lot of people, particularly people who haven't used marijuana because of the illegality. And welcoming them back into the market and having a nice store where they can go and not feel like a criminal and buy it will go a long way toward reducing your black market sales. I mean, you've got your drug dealer. You go there. You get the same strain from him every week. Now you can go to a store like this, and you can walk across three tables and pick from 20 strains, and it's a very interesting experience, and you're really interested in doing it, and it's all perfectly legal. You might say goodbye to your drug dealer, right? And that's sort of the point of commercialization, is bringing people, as you say, out of the dark into the light.
All right. I actually had myself written down next, then John, then Larry. My question is, so you referred to the opt-out provision. You also referred to that the board would not issue a license if there were zoning restrictions in a municipality. Are those the same? Is opt-out the same as creating zoning restrictions?
No.
Okay.
No. One is, we're out. We're not going to have any commercial marijuana establishments. So, hey, board, you're not even going to get any applications from Kodiak, and if you do, you got to deny it because we opted out. The other one is local control. We're going to have them here, but we're going to control where they are, how many there are, what their hours are. We're going to have a conditional use permit process, or we're going to have a licensing process, a dual licensing process. All of those are allowed, and we're going to tax it. You know, we're going to make some money off of it.
John?
Once you get past the initial wave of applications on the administrative side, has there been any indication of just how much staff time is required of the municipalities to manage these the marijuana sale licenses? Or is it similar to the liquor licenses? Once they're issued, it's just a matter of quarterly reporting. So is there additional staff time anticipated required to manage this?
At the municipal level? You mean for the enforcement reporting?
Any reporting requirements that the municipality will have to take on an additional burden to oversee in some form or fashion, has that been proven?
Well, you're going to take on whatever requirements you set for yourself. And so remember I just said that the Department of Law said we can't even tell us if you opt out. We're not even allowed to order you to tell us if you opt out. So we're not ordering you to tell us anything. We're not ordering you to report anything to us. But if you're going to exhibit some local control and have some ordinances, you're inevitably going to have some time tied up at the municipality, not only making the ordinances, but but enforcing the ordinances and making sure people are following your processes. I can tell you the city and county of Denver did that. They made their own licensing system, a dual licensing system. The first year, the city and county of Denver, which has no limit on number of licenses, I don't know if anybody's been there since 2012, but there's a lot of marijuana stores in Denver area, and the city and county of Denver has 650,000 people in it, and they added initially 22 staff, and they went back halfway through the year and added 15.5 more. So they added 37.5 staff to manage the licenses in the city and county of Denver, but that included extra DRE officers to run more DUI checks, extra fire officer officials to inspect the extraction equipment, all kinds of manners of employees, accountants, because they tax the heck out of it in the city and county of Denver, and they paid for all 37.5 employees with the money from licensing fees and with money to spare.
Larry?
Thank you. It looks to me like the borough has to look at our zoning regulations, because I don't think they were designed for marijuana businesses, because it seems like three out of the four are home-based businesses, you know, that somebody could do out of their home, and as I understand it, would pretty much fit anywhere in the community. But I'm a little concerned with the 500-foot distance from schools and activity centers. I understand what you mean in some of our rural sites, but it also means that children will be walking to school in front of businesses with signs that are extolling the virtues of their particular brand, if you will, and I know there may be a rule against that, but I would be concerned with that. And I think in larger communities, 500 feet is very small, and especially for walkers, you know, who walk to school and are walking by these places every day. And the other thing, just to hit on at the same time, is so I have a large warehouse and I'm growing in my big hoop house in my backyard. Okay. Do bears are attracted to marijuana, by the way?
I have no idea.
Just wondering.
I hope someone knows.
It's a new problem. What kind of security am I supposed to provide so that it doesn't become a, you know?
Well, it's supposed to be excluded from public view. If you're a licensed grower, if you have a personal grow, it's supposed to be excluded from public view. And we've already had people question, like, I have a deck. I can see it in my neighbor's yard. It's offending me. You know, I can see it. You know, and we've asked that person, if you stand at ground level, you know, they have a 6-foot privacy fence, can you see it? No, you know. And is that a public view, your deck? Do you invite the public onto your deck? You know, no. So we had to tell that lady, sorry, move, or, you know, start a neighbor war. I don't know. Do whatever you do when you don't like what your neighbors are doing. The commercial establishments, outdoor grows are allowed, and there was some board action around the view and the fencing, and they ended up with what I think is a very minimal fencing requirement for outdoor grows, which is 6-foot fence. There's some signage requirements. Again, the board expanded the size of the sign. There was a limitation on one sign for a retail store, and it was a smallish sign, and so they kept it at one sign but added a lot of square inches to the sign, so it could be a much larger sign. And there are some restrictions on advertising, including some disclaimers that have to be made in any advertising, and advertising cannot be appealing to children. You can't have the Joe Camel of marijuana, you know, in your advertisement, or any cartoon characters or anything like that. So those are some issues that we had to address. Packaging, labeling, and advertising in alcohol are all governed by a federal agency, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, which has a division called the TTB, the Tax and Trade Bureau, which approves all alcohol labeling that goes on beer bottles, everything that you see on your alcohol. Well, it has all been passed through the feds. Funnily enough, the feds won't do this for us in marijuana. So it is a task that our board is required to take on, and a piece of requirements that we had to put in the regulations that are things that we really don't have to worry about on the alcohol side. So I hear your concerns. One of your options as a local government is to say 500 feet isn't enough from us from a school. You know, we're going to make it that bigger for a school or for whatever. We do have four types of places in the buffer zone. So you find the buffer zone in 010A. And the board will not issue a marijuana establishment license if the licensed premises will be located within 500 feet of a school grounds, a recreation, or youth center. That term recreation or youth center is defined in the back. A building in which religious services are regularly conducted, or a correctional facility. Do you have a jail here on Kodiak?
Yes.
Is it a community jail? Do you have a contract with DOC? Or no?
Yes.
So you do house state prisoners there. So that's likely to be a correctional facility. The measurements are measured differently for school grounds, recreation, or youth center than for the other types of buildings. So for school grounds, recreation, or youth center, you measure from the outside edge of the school property to the main door to the establishment. For the churches and the correctional facilities, you measure door to door. So that's all here in 3AC 306-010A.
All right. Follow up, and then I think that's going to be last call on questions.
Just so I understand, the 5 or 10 mile circle around. So, and again, I may not understand this. So the city decides to allow it. Borough says no. So the city is preeminent. Does that mean they stop at the city limits, or does that go beyond the city limits for 5 to 10 miles?
I think that is a really great question that I absolutely do not know the answer to. So if your 10 miles around the city is within the borough and the two local governments have differing positions on what's allowed and what's not, I think that is going to be an area of challenge to the regulations. In other words, does the 10-mile buffer zone around the city that extends into the borough count as the city's choice, or is it the borough's choice because it's in their limits? I think that's a place that's not really answered by the regulations, and that makes my head hurt.
You've been listening to KMXT's Talk of the Rock. Thanks for tuning in.